Well, kia ora everybody. Welcome to Major Daikou Last Day Events News. I'm on the road at the moment and got some interesting things that I'm going to be talking to you about tonight. There's some interesting things happening in the background that I can't talk to you about tonight, but life is interesting, isn't it? We had a wonderful day yesterday. It was Anzac Day in New Zealand and Australia. And, you know, it's a very emotional day for me because I guess once you've been in the military, you have a sense of what men and women may have felt and may have gone through in preparation to go to combat theatres, combat zones to serve our country. And in my tenure in the New Zealand Army, it was the thing that we wanted to do was to get deployed. It was, you know, it was something that everybody fought over. You know, a deployment opportunity, and I tried twice to go. In fact, I was pretty close to going to work in Darwin and then go to East Timor, but it didn't end up happening. But the strange thing is, today I wouldn't cross the road for the UN, and I wouldn't cross the road for any deployments anymore. And it's funny how things change. Because, you know, I was extremely proud to be a New Zealand Army soldier, proud of my uniform, and as I showed you last night, my photo when I was at an RSA, Papatoetoe RSA Anzac Day March, I was proudly asked to carry the flag, the New Zealand flag, which I did on behalf of my unit, 3 Auk North, and, you know, and I don't regret any of that. But what I know now about all of this, Would I do that again and be able to do that with a good and clear conscience? Probably not, because New Zealand has changed, and I don't believe we've changed for the best, but it's happening all around the world. Doesn't excuse it, doesn't make it any better for us. I mean, I know my Bible tells me very clearly what's coming down the pipeline, and strangely enough, you live in this existence where I want the Lord to come. I want him to end all this, and I want to get out of here. That's what the Bible tells me. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things to go through between now and then, but that's essentially my position on it. I see nothing attractive about this world anymore, and that's probably a good thing if you follow the Lord. But we do have to live for now. We have to help each other, and my position is I don't care whether you believe in God or not. I do. You know I do. But the point is, I'm not going to be a bigot or judge you if you do or don't. If you're a person of another religion, I don't care about that. I'm still going to love you, still going to be decent and human to you, and want to look after you and pray for your well-being. And that's it. And so, you know, there's no need for us to believe that this is a left and right issue. It's about right, doing the right thing. It is. And this mess that we've seen in the world unfold before us isn't going to get better. It's going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse. But we can have hope. We can have trust in God that he knows exactly what's going on. He's going to fix this. That's for sure. He wins the war. I've read the end of the Bible. And these things that we can do together as a family on the way to that end result. And that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this. I've been traveling all day. That's why I'm here at 7:36 now, with my family, whānau in a family in a motel room, stuck down the other end so they don't annoy me while I'm doing this, because I believe in it. I believe I've got a role here to play to help us look at these issues and see who these people are that want to control us and push us into this global control, this new global governance, this new global order that they are rushing us at breakneck speed to go into. All of them are, whether it be Christopher Luxon, opposition leader, so-called, but is he really opposition? I don't know. I'm waiting to see. I don't think so. He hasn't convinced me by a long shot. What about Labour? Do we trust them? Well, I think we know the answer to that now. But does it really matter whether you're on the left or the right? Not my view, because what's coming is coming for everyone. Where these unwell people want to take us is going to push everybody into a corner and everybody into a net of control we probably can't even yet imagine. And so we, you know, for me, I don't care if you're a lefty, I don't care if you think you're a righty, but we need to come together to deal with what we we are seeing unfold in our midst. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to believe that a man can be a woman and have a baby, well, that's up to you to live in that delusion. I'm not going to judge you. To me, it's untruthful to believe that. It's not the truth. Biologically, it's not the truth. Morally, it's not the truth. And just common sense, it's not the truth, is it? So, but am I, or should we be horrible to those people that are involved in this, in that issue? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. In fact, I think we should go the other way. Love them, be kind to them, but just say, please keep your hands off our children. No, I don't want my child or my mokopuna, my grandchildren, to be exposed to transvestite, transsexual men. I don't, in dresses. No, I don't want that. And I don't, and I do want the right to teach my children my value system. And that includes talking to my child about their gender and about their sexuality and things like that, without the threat of facing 7 years in jail for doing that. And that's the fact now in New Zealand. If you get caught speaking to your child about their sexuality and about their maybe gender confusion or sexual confusion, if you get caught doing that and they don't like what you're saying, then it's likely that you're going to face charges and jail time. And I can't believe that. It's unbelievable that that's even an issue. But really, what we see there is really the underlining and emphasizing of the absurd world that we live in today. Well, I've got a few interesting articles that I'm going to share with you tonight. Now, I've got to be reasonably quick and speak like a chipmunk because I've got 78% charge left on my laptop tonight, and I'm on the road and I didn't bring my extension. So I want to get through this, and so to help me get through this, what I'm going to do is go through my housekeeping that I normally do. All right, tomorrow night, guys, don't miss this. Don't miss this at all. At 7:30 tomorrow night, we are going to have the Magic Dicol Health and Your Wellbeing show with my sister and your sister, Caroline Mansfield. And I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to be talking about health. We're going to be talking about UK issues. Of course, Caroline lives in London. She'll give us some of the updates of things that are happening there, also in the medical and natural health world. And we're going to be talking about Photonic again, because a lot of you want to buy Photonic, the shields, etc. And I've got my, this is my Trinity device. And this is what is a EMF shield that I use all the time, and you can wear that around your neck. And I do it because I'm surrounded by EMF in the work that I do. I'm always on my phone, always on my laptop, and I know that's no good. But anyway, tomorrow night I'll be covering these issues with Sister Caroline Mansfield. Don't forget, also we've got our Justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood campaign going. And the more and more that this is getting out, I'm getting letters and emails from people from all around the world, from Norway, from England, from Canada, from Australia, from all around the world. It's amazing. People that are getting in touch with me, lawyers that are reaching out to me from overseas, and this is getting out very, very quickly. And from what I understand is this, is that it's pretty clear, I think, to everybody in the legal fraternity, in the legal community, that the sentence for jail for this is completely, completely out of whack. But what I'm interested in understanding now is how did the judge, or how did this judiciary system get to a place where it would override the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act under Section 5? You know, where it talks about limiting your Bill of Rights. Well, is having a peaceful protest that caused no harm, no physical harm, no property harm, no human harm, no big public disorder or nuisance, anything like that, you know, does that constitute living within the bounds of the New Zealand Bill of Rights? I think it does. And were those orders lawful that were put out on that day? So I think these are the things that we need to look at, and look at whether New Zealand is a truly democratic free society. Because if they jail us, then patently we're not. We're not. So we've got our appeal, of course, in the High Court soon. Now, you'll be very, very pleased to know, and I am, the campaign that we're doing, the petition, which we do want to take to our appeal and say, look, the world is watching us. New Zealanders are watching this, and nobody thinks that going to jail for this, for a crime which isn't a crime, is the right thing to do. And so the first big milestone that we're hitting now is the 10,000 mark. So we've got 9,740 signatures on this. God willing, we will hit 10,000 this evening. So that's really, really exciting. Again, a reminder, the editing for this documentary is well underway, and I'm so looking forward to it. And I'm like you, don't worry. I'm like a little kid that wants my presents today, and I can't wait until Christmas Day. But we're gonna have to wait because we've got to get this right and do it once. And then you're gonna have one, two, three, possibly four episodes of an amazing documentary that you will be able to use to educate family that perhaps don't know what's going on and haven't woken up to it. Also, guys, and I have to say it because I need your help. If you'd like to support the work that I do, if you'd like to support me with paying my legal fees, this is the account to do it. I do need help. I've got another payment I've got to send out probably by Friday, and if you could help me do that, I would be very, very grateful. I'm in a pickle with this, and don't worry, it's nothing that I ever expected I'd have to do at almost 51, is to face charges from the Electoral Commission, charges from the police and the government because of protesting. It's completely unbelievable, isn't it? Well, I think so anyway, not just because it's me, but because we've seen the end of the New Zealand that we loved. Anyway, to emphasize the point that I was saying before, we are all being played. Divide and conquer. If they keep us fighting with each other, we will never fight the true enemy, the establishment. And that's why I want to say to people, please wake up. Please wake up. Don't think because that I sit in a different box to you that I'm your enemy. I'm not your enemy. I don't want to be anyone's enemy. I don't. I want to be an enemy to the devil and his angels and those who want to perpetrate evil and harm. I'm their enemy. But even if they turn around and said, look, I need help, I want to change, of course I'd be the first there to help that happen. So we're not enemies to each other, and I want to encourage everybody not to look at each other like that. That's for sure. And that includes the freedom movement, which is so fractured, it really isn't funny. It's just, it really is no good. All right, one of the things I want to start off tonight, because it really got under my skin, is I want to look at this article which I brought out today. And to say I was angry when I saw this is it was a mixture of anger, controlled anger, but it was a mixture of anger and incredulity and really a sense of being in like a Twilight Zone moment when I saw this article here. And I'll make it a little bit smaller so we can get it in. Now, this is from the newsroom, and this is the ideas room, right? And now newsroom is very much a left-wing, what would you call them? A left-wing government shill agency, probably receiving, you know, of course, some of that really lovely and helpful, you know, public interest journalism fund money. Remember the 55 million that the government gave to media to attack people like you and me? Do you remember that? Yeah, this is one of those. But listen to this. This article today by this man is simply unbelievable. His name is Nicholas Agar, and Nicholas Agar is a professor of ethics at the University of Waikato, and I figured out who he was later on today because it was stirring around my mind. And you probably know who he is already by me saying that, but look what he's writing here. A lockdown day would allow us to correctly remember the pandemic. It is important we think about the lives New Zealand saved in the pandemic because of our response. A national lockdown day would serve as a stark reminder of the human cost of not taking swift action. So Right there, I want to be perfectly clear about something. This man is a nut job. This man is insane. He's not well. He's blinded. I don't know what's wrong with him. And this is what's teaching the young people of New Zealand down at Waikato, New Zealand. And that's the problem, you see, because these types have got into universities all around the world. And it's a part of a strategy, isn't it? And so he starts talking about it. And but one of the things he said is amazing, really. He goes on about it, talks about it. But look at what he goes into here. A national lockdown could be a lasting legacy, standing as a testament to what selfless collective action can achieve. No, people were forced into it. Millions of people didn't want it. It may be a more useful national myth, than Anzac Day. How dare he speak that? And they put this out. When did they put this out? The day after Anzac Day. Can you believe how disrespectful these people truly are? It may be useful, it may be a more useful national myth than Anzac Day, as Aotearoa seeks to properly engage with what? Climate change? You see, look, this is the problem. This is the problem. Is that the woke left, they've got a mixture of everything, haven't they? They've got the COVID-19 tyranny, lockdown harm, medical tyranny, medical harm. We've got, we've got military out on the streets. We've got Lockie in the homes. We've got wear your face mask and get hypoxia. We've got get the kids to wear their masks so you can train them to be conditioned to be obedient serfs and slaves. And then you've got climate change, which is your 15-minute cities, which is your carbon footprint tracker, which is your high surveillance agency, global surveillance, which is your privacy gone, which is your central bank digital currency, which is knowing everything about you, which involves, if it was up to the World Economic Forum, involves transhumanism. So that's where this guy is coming from. But look at this again. Look at this. You know, who are those fortunate thousands who will be dead but for New Zealand's collective response? So the man's in denial. He doesn't know the science, because the truth of it is, we were told there'd be 80,000 people dead if we didn't get our response right. And then Sean Hendy said, well, the deaths could still be as high as 45,000 even if we did get it right. And then later on, when they were using lockdowns and the deaths just weren't there, they amended their model again and said 7,000 deaths a year, and that would mean over 21,000 deaths now. We've had just over 2,000, the same as the seasonal flu. So this man is in denial, isn't he? Is that fair, or am I being too harsh? I'd like to get your thoughts on that. But what I'd like you to do is I think that this man that we're listening to here is the same man that's written that article. Now, this man he's a professor at, where is he? He's at Waikato University. Let's see what he has to say, just a few seconds worth. You've seen this before, but I want to remind you in context to what we're seeing.
Another union collapsing, another group like Communist China accelerated. And again, yes, there was a huge humanitarian cost on.
Now, this is what gets me every time. He says, yes, there was a huge humanitarian cost, but, you know, that's just the price of doing business. He just brushes past it, unbelievably so. But that human cost were tens of millions of ordinary Chinese who did not want to be communists. But he just passes by it.
On their advance, but we have to be honest here as well.
Oh, yeah.
What the Chinese have done in ending absolute poverty for their people is spectacular, absolutely remarkable. Their economic growth, their technological innovation, they're socially progressive, they're very proud people.
So they're a very, very proud people. Of course they're very, very proud people, because if you don't agree with them, they've got the power to just kill you. That's it. But don't you think it's funny, in a very, very serious and tragic way, that you've got this man also from University of Waikato, it may be the same professor. I'm gonna do some digging about this and find out exactly who he is, this man. What's his name again? Agar. What's his name? Let's just check that out again. Nicholas Agar. Because he's insane. He's an insane individual. He's insane. What lockdown day would be for? So the premise is he wants to have an annual lockdown day, like another day off. Lockdown, stay at home. Counterfactual, deaths are easily overlooked as dogs that don't bark in the night. But the lesson for politicians about the pandemic seems to be the lingering anger over the vaccine mandates and lockdowns. Oh my gosh. Boris Johnson's personal style may have triggered his downfall, but Britons appeared forgiving about the deaths caused by his confused pandemic response. After all, Johnson got COVID too and was in intensive care, even though he is jabbed up to his eyeballs. Thinking back on how many Britons died because of his mistakes means thinking back on the coronavirus, which many would rather forget. So this guy is coming from a really, really strange article. This is a University of Waikato professor. He's unbelievable. He's just not looking at the facts. He's just not looking at honest science. And you know what? And he's trying to make out that New Zealand was happy with that. Well, I'll tell you how happy New Zealand was with that, is that Jacinda Ardern is gone. So does he think he's going to get support for this concept? I tell you what he might get. He might get a lot of letters from some of you or emails from some of you telling him he's an absolute nut job, which you wouldn't be wrong. And he's speaking like this at a time when New Zealand businesses are at their most distressed. We've got businesses now. We had that big famous restaurant bar down in the viaduct down in Auckland there closed because COVID destroyed it. And now we're in a recession. They're promising that it may get worse for small businesses. And you've got this man. Now, he's a professor from academia. Now, this is the interesting thing. And Amy Benjamin told me this. Sister Amy told me this. She said that most of academia during the lockdowns, if not all of it, all of them got paid because they worked from home. They didn't have to go to work. They didn't have to leave home. They were well off. And everybody got their money. Everybody. Just like those politicians wanting to lock you down and destroy your business and all those good things, all of them were getting their wages and salaries. And whatever happened with Jacinda Ardern saying 10 or 20% of all the MPs should of their salaries should be given back to the government to pay for the cost of lockdowns and in solidarity with the public. But I don't know. I don't think that happened, did it? But it really, really wasn't just that. It was the harm. Rise in self-harm, hospitalizations, points to growing mental health crisis among young people. Look at this. Look at this article here. Let's see if I can make it a bit bigger. No, I'll have to read it to you. It says, children and young people were taken to hospital after self-harming more than 5,600 times in the year to September, escalating an alarming trend that mental health experts says is indicative of growing distress among young New Zealanders. Mental health practitioners told The Week in Health that rates of psychological difficulties among children and teenagers were rising before the emergence of COVID-19 and have got significantly worse since the pandemic started. They brace for another surge after the Omicron break. So they're not being very honest there, but let's get a few more, shall we? Because over here, look at this. Look at all these articles. It's quite amazing, actually. It's quite amazing. It's so sad. It says, you know, the rise in hospitalizations, but look at all of these articles about the harm in kids. Look at it. Look at it. These are children. These are children, lockdown anxiety, rise in self-harm growing. And it just goes on and on and on. Look, lockdowns are challenging, but kids are resilient. Well, they weren't that resilient. I'll tell you how resilient they weren't. The University of New Zealand, whoever that is, must be Auckland University. You know, we had kids commit suicide through each lockdown, including the first day of lockdown when I was arrested. And so they're just not honest, are they? I don't know how these media can sleep at night. And so, you know, when you look at these things, you know, increase in harm, it's just there, self-harm, you know. And we average, during the lockdowns, we were averaging, and I want to be perfectly clear on this, we were averaging 100 kids a week going into hospitals across New Zealand because of lockdown harm, lockdown anxiety, and they were taking it out on themselves. They were slitting their wrists. They were doing all sorts of stuff, and it's just horrible. But what about the people? What about those people that were alone by themselves, who wanted to harm themselves because they were lonely and didn't know what to do, didn't know what to do about being lonely? What about the over 35,000 businesses that went under because of lockdowns? What about the increase in domestic violence and crime? What about all those things? And you've got this communist university, which is Waikato University. See, the big three is Auckland University, Waikato University, Otago University. You get bits and pieces out of the other universities, but those three are the most woke and dangerous and communist. They really are. They're highly socialist at the very, very least. And you've got this Professor Agar from Waikato University saying it's a great idea to have a day like this off, a lockdown day, so we can remember. Well, I tell you what, Professor Agar, how about we get all the numbers of all the people and all the parents of children and all the families of those that committed suicide because of lockdowns? Why don't we see if we can get a few numbers for you, and you ring them up and talk about what a great thing a lockdown is, especially when you consider that the thing they're locking you down for is the flu equivalent. And I quote epidemiologist Peter McIntyre from Otago University, who had a full, massive article written for him and about him in stuffed.com last week, saying, time to move on, New Zealand. Time to move on. It's the same as the flu for 99.9% of New Zealand. Yep. But not according to Agar. He wants to rub your face in it. So, Mr. Agar, how about I get you the phone numbers of some people I know who lost their businesses and who lost everything? I think that would work, don't you? I think that would kind of work. I do. I think that would work. We should think about that. So these people are just insane. They really are. These I don't know really what more you can say about them. Really, it's just insane. But you know, we've got a communist university posting this type of material. You've got the university lecturer talking about what a fantastic society China is. But where do you think the mandate for speaking like this comes from? Let's have a listen.
I cannot say anything. Comrade the party leader, our comrades and comrades, not only the secretariat, but our UC presidium who stand behind me. Comrades, as we leave this festival, remember that you have comrades around the world fighting for the same principles, fighting for the same things. You have solidarity. Comrades, the second thing.
So does that ring a bell for you? Does that remind you? I should go back to there. And how about I get this thing good? I just had to shift, guys. So let's get that camera back on here. And let's go back to here. Sorry, guys. I'm going to have to muck around a wee bit with this. Oh, my golly. But I hope that gives you a reminder as to what actually happened. Actually, what happened when we had Jacinda Ardern as our fearless leader? And is it any surprise that we've got people like that in our academia? I don't think so. I don't think it's any surprise. I don't think we should be surprised that we've got academia that are teaching our kids about this, because look at this.
As a movement, we have not won. I mean that within our own organisations, we are still fighting for our principles there too. When we come to a youth festival and our women are harassed, we have not won. And as long as we come together as comrades...
Comrades again. There it is, comrades. And so what we have now and what we're living through, and if you're wealthy, you need to get prepared for this. We're now starting to see the total rolling out of communist theology in the New Zealand government. Now, I want to go into these articles here, because if you have any money whatsoever, right, if you have any money whatsoever, then you should pay attention to these articles, right? Just give me one second here. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's get this right. Here we go. All right. So this here is an article that should concern you, because the Labour government is now wanting to tax the rich. I'm sorry, I can barely move my left shoulder, which is not why I'm not going like that too easily. But the Labour government has now declared warfare and war on people with any sense of means, right? Now, by David Parker's own admission today, and I've been listening to him speak in the media today, I wanted to hear what he had to say, is that he's blaming 311 people in New Zealand for the state of the economy. Now, 311 people in New Zealand have a combined revenue value of about around about $80 billion. That's a lot of money. Now, additional to that, those high net worth individuals are paying around $2 million each per annum to the government in tax, right? Whereas, and it's worked out that they're paying around 8.9% in tax, plus if they employ people, plus, you know, these other things that they do to help the economy. Now, by David Parker's reckoning, is that he's saying, well, because they earn so much, right, they need to pay a lot more. But what he's not looking at is the fact that, and I'm not defending rich people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not wealthy. I'm not rich. I've got no dog in this fight. Maybe 10 years ago, when I was earning really massive amounts of money, it was all good. But these people are not, they're not out of whack in terms of what they overall contribute to New Zealand economy, right? So, of course, David Parker is the revenue minister. He's looking at tax. You've got a New Zealand government that's ruined the economy through overspending, out of control spending. And so they're wanting to tax everybody to climb their way out of it. So that's basically what they're trying to do. They're trying to create all these reasons and pretenses so that they can tax anyone that they consider wealthy. Now, the problem is this, is that they're considering people in the medium income bracket as around $80,000 or less, and around there. So if you have $80,000 or more going into your house, and above $80,000, you are now considered rich. Now, to give you an idea of what that means by scale in the world, if you have your own home and you're paying it off, right, and you earn, say, more than $100 a day, you're in the rich 1%. Believe it or not, you're considered very, very wealthy. Now, when I was researching this topic here, before I go there, it's ridiculous. You know, there are literally lists upon lists of articles about how they define people as being rich, countries as being rich. So, as strange it may sound, they consider, you know, New Zealand, even with all our people that are homeless, living in cars, can't feed the kids, as essentially being wealthy. Now look at this. This is the World Economic Forum. Now, nothing the World Economic Forum should really surprise you, really. But look at what they say. Who are the 1%? The answer might surprise you. But all this is here is just creepy justification for themselves. This is Klaus Schwab and his band of mad men. And what they're saying is actually it might be easier to go back to the headline actually, which I will do. It says this: the Global Wealth Report 2015 highlights another unexpected fact that the world's wealthiest is not entirely made up of billionaires, but contains a significant number of people whose assets amount to $759,900 or over. So if you've got anything like that, you are considered incredibly wealthy. Even if you have to pay the thing up, you may have a massive mortgage, a massive debt, you are still classed as being wealthy. And that's the problem here. Because within communism, as like Comrade Jacinda Ardern was saying, communism means there's only the very top elite and everybody else called the proletariat. And that's now because of the technocratic authoritarian structures, you now have the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, if you like, that are the big dogs in this world. It's not us. It's not you that earns maybe $90,000 a year, which now barely cuts the mustard. You may have two people in a house working, you know, awfully long hours, and they might only get $50,000 each, and but it's $100,000 in their home, and they still can't buy a house. It's because cost of living in New Zealand is absolutely unbelievable. The expense of everything here is out of control. And so New Zealand can't compete with Australia, where everything is so much cheaper, building is cheaper, average wage $32,000 a year higher. But what are they talking about here? They're talking about when Labor talks about the rich, who are they really talking about? I think they're talking about talking about anybody who's not on the dole. That's basically what I think. I'd love to know your thoughts about that. Let's have a look at this article here. Let's have a look at what this guy has to say, because this guy here, you know, this is the irony about this guy, by the way. In case you didn't know it, David Parker is a very wealthy man, right? He's a very wealthy man, but he's a socialist. And it's buzzy to say that, but let's have a listen to what he has to say here.
IRD's methodology has been critiqued and improved by outside experts. It is the IRD's report, not mine. It is their careful analysis, and you can trust and rely upon it. So today, Inland Revenue is publishing its findings on the effective tax rates for high wealth individuals. IRD has analysed their various sources of income and the tax they pay. Most people earn the vast majority of their income from salary and wages, which is all taxable. Their tax is paid largely via income tax and GST. For the wealthiest Kiwis, just 7% of their income is taxed as personal income. So if you look at this graph up here, the mid-blue 7% bar at the bottom is the equivalent of the salary and wages and that are the predominant source of income for most people.
All right, so you get the drift. You get the drift here. If you have any type of income, and I don't think he's just talking about the 311 people that are, you know, have an average wealth of over $250 million each, and some of them are billionaires. He's not just talking about them. He's starting to set the groundwork whereby they're going to come for anybody with any type of asset. You know that. You know, he was talking today about not targeting capital gains tax, such as on properties, etc. But you cannot trust them. This is a desperado government. They've overspent. They've ruined the country. They've ruined our economy, they've destroyed businesses, and they don't know how they're going to pay for it. They've printed money that they can't back up, they've monetized our debt by getting RBNZ to print money. They've done all those things, all those, you know, stupendous things that they did. But the greatest thing that they did, stupidity, that they locked New Zealand down and destroyed our economy based on a flu-equivalent virus. What they should have done is what I said in 2020, during my election campaign, and what Professor Simon Thornley said in early February 2020, and what Johnny Unitas said in late 2019, early 2020, and that is we needed to take care of the vulnerable, but let everybody get on with life, because we're dealing with an infection fatality rate of way less than 1% for most humans. Now, the fact is, they still say, that the COVID-19 vaccine is safe. And yet in New Zealand, according to government statistics, well over 65,000 people have been harmed, almost 4,000 seriously harmed, over 1,000 people with myocarditis, pericarditis. This is all government information. I showed you it last night. And yet they still say it's safe. But if they went the other way and applied the same approach to trying to tell us how many people, telling us whether the vaccine is safe or not, they'll say it's safe because of the low numbers compared to the 11.5 million doses that they put out there. But that's a huge amount of people harmed. Now, back here, when we look at the economic destruction from the COVID-19 response, they've got to pay for it. They've got to pay for it somehow. And what are they going to do? Are they going to tax a solo mum already on welfare? No, they can't. Are they going to tax, are they going to attack and tax a factory worker in East Tamaki? Probably. They'll probably end up there. They probably will. Because if you're earning $80,000 a year or more, you're going to be a prime rib, sort of the Fred Flintstone size. So you've got this whole communistic approach to all this that's going on. It's absolutely communistic, and it's rich coming from a guy like that, from David Parker, who is rich, and who had his salary, had his chauffeur-driven cars, had his free flights during lockdowns. All good, no problem with him. What about this guy here, who wanted to go and find you if you weren't jabbed? Chris Simpkins admits he's wealthy as Inland Revenue probes how much tax-rich people are paying. Well, I think there's a deeper question here. Where did he get his money if mostly he's been a nobody in his life? Now, I don't mean to sound unkind saying that, but when you go through Chris Hipkins' background, he's done hardly anything. He was at university for almost forever. He was into communism when he was a university student. And then he basically jumped on the coattails of Jacinda Ardern, and here he is today, Prime Minister. So I'd be curious, I would be literally genuinely curious to know where he got his money from. But isn't it funny though, that while they're sitting in such a sweet spot, they're wanting to increase the pressure on these 311 individuals who probably employ hundreds if not thousands of people in our economy. Now, one of the other problems with this announcement, besides they're probably going to come for you, if you've got any sort of sense of fiscal capacity, is that people that are going to look at New Zealand are going to go, I'm not ever going to blink in New Zealand. Why would any person with any type of capability, other than Bill Gates, because he wants to own everything and run New Zealand for us, on behalf of the World Economic Forum and the United Nations, why would anybody want to come to New Zealand? Nurses don't, doctors don't. So many people don't want to come to New Zealand. I hear from them all the time. International people saying they always wanted to come to New Zealand until 3 years ago. They never want to come to New Zealand. And why would you stay in New Zealand? I'm sorry that I'm speaking like this about my beloved country. I want to leave here. I do. Some of you that may see this may go, oh yeah, good riddance. But I love my country. I do. I don't love what it's become, and I don't love who's running it. I think it's disgusting. It really is. And now you got these communists that are going for you. Now, isn't it funny, again, I talk about the academia, the role of academia in all this. But isn't it funny, guys? Isn't it funny that Jacinda Ardern, has been given a fantastic job? Look at her. She's going to join Harvard University, folks. Let's see what she has to say about it. And I'm sorry if you've just eaten. Just bear with me. We'll get past it. Let's have a listen.
Right, so we're almost 10 weeks on from when you formally resigned as Prime Minister. How are you doing? Yeah, well, it's gone by incredibly quickly. I remember at the time when I resigned thinking that I'd have this long period before I left Parliament where I would be able to do so many things, you know, farewell people, archive, pack. It's flown by.
How has life changed?
All right, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it. But let's just get on with it, eh? So the former Prime Minister says she will join the prestigious Harvard University in Boston for a semester. There, she will be a Hauser leader in the Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership and 2023's Angelopoulos Global Public Leaders Fellow. Now, this is United Nations Secretary General preparation. If I'm wrong, then I'll eat my vegan dinner. Kennedy School Dean Douglas Elmendorf said Ardern had showed the world strong empathetic leadership. She earned respect far beyond the shores of her country. Really? Why is that, Harvard University? Because they are woke. They are teaching their kids the same thing that University of Waikato is, that socialism, that lefticism, globalism, that climate change, COVID measures are all kaitepai, all excellent, karawe, totally fantastic. You know, that's what they teach. But, you know, when you look at these articles, you know, and here's another one for you. You've got this one here, you know, she's been appointed to 3 Harvard University fellowships. Now, why is that? Well, I'll tell you why, because and you can do your own research on this, but when you get appointed into these fellowships, they are paid either between $14,000 and about $115,000, $120,000 each. So for her to do this, she'll probably get about $360,000, $350,000 for a semester, or that part of it, all right? So there she is. So she's not doing it for nothing, that's for sure. But this is her. This should remind you of her last visit to Harvard. And what did I say when she was doing this? I said to everybody that when she was on the trip to America, when she did this, when she met with BlackRock, when she probably met with Vanguard and all these other people that she met with over there, including the Secretary General of the UN, Antonio Guterres, I said she was over there looking for jobs. It was a brand Ardern campaign, not a brand New Zealand campaign. But just to remind you of her last visit to Harvard University, let's have a look at this.
Lord Warrior, a lone person unacquainted with personal hygiene practices.
Now, if you didn't know, she's talking about people who don't agree with her in New Zealand, right? I just want to make sure that you know the context of this. This is Jacinda Ardern talking about you and me and describing us to these Americans that are sitting there, and I don't think they're that impressed with her doing it.
Keyboard warrior, a lone person unacquainted with personal hygiene practices, dressed in a poorly fitted superhero costume, one that is baggy in all the wrong places.
But underneath all of that, Madam Speaker, there is a river of filth.
Oh, what? All right. I just wanted to show you that to remind you of her last trip to Harvard University and what it looked like. So she was there basically telling everybody that you and I, people like you, people like me, that we're just nut jobs, conspiracy theorists, and we're ugly, and we're just horrible people who are unclean and lone keyboard warriors who wear superhero costumes in all the wrong places. But what is she going? What else is she going to do now? Well, I tell you what she's going to do. Whoop! Hold on. What did I just do there? There we go. She has now also taken up a post to lead this as well. The Christchurch call to eliminate terrorist and violent extremist content online. So now look at that. You got Macron. You got Trudeau. She's right there with all of the tyrants. These three here are the face of the young global communist fascist leadership. All three of them. They're right there. I don't know who all these others are. I don't really care. But these three here have absolutely destroyed their countries let's talk about Trudeau, destroyed his country, has the country hate him. Macron, France and Paris are burning. Jacinda Ardern, well, she's gone because of the hate that was leveled at her. Now, I'm not into hate, and, you know, there's no way that we should carry hate for any of these people. What we should carry is determination to hold them accountable, but also forgiveness and pray that they'll turn from their sins. And so, but they won't. But she has taken over the role of being in charge, being one of the key leaders in this censorship organization. It's called the Christchurch Core. Why is that? It's because it was all dreamt up at a conference that was held in the South Island of New Zealand, in our capital city down there, the capital city of South Island of New Zealand, called Christchurch. So the Christchurch Call is a community of over 120 governments, online service providers, there's the fascism, that's the fascism, and civil society organisations acting together to eliminate terrorist and violent extremist content online. Now this is the problem. This is the problem with this, another problem, is that you have these people that call you and me domestic terrorists and say that we are violent because we don't agree with them and we speak up about it clearly, honestly, calmly. And that's why when people say we need to hang politicians and all that rubbish, it's rubbish. It doesn't help anyone. Makes you and me, we look like a bunch of nut jobs, right? And yes, there's going to be some of us are like that on the side of the fence line. I appreciate that. But let not that be the opportunity for the shill media like Stuff.com, Newsroom, Spinoff, you know, who else? News Hub, Radio New Zealand, One News, New Zealand Herald, you know, have the opportunity to you know, identify people in that nut job kind of way as being those who have these concerns that we have. But you just heard, you know, you just heard Jacinda Ardern, she's describing people who don't agree with her as being nut job conspiracy theorists who are unclean, who wear superhero costumes that are baggy in the wrong places. But very, very seriously, you've also got New Zealand politicians that are classing me, I'm totally anti-violence, I'm a pacifist, I'm a Christian man, I've always been a pacifist. Always, I'm the son of a peace ambassador for Kohiro, which is a long-term historic Māori organisation, and yet they look at me potentially as a domestic terrorist because I speak the truth and I call them out. That's the problem. So would they be able to reinterpret what I'm saying here as being terrorism language? Am I trying to incite violence or armed resistance? Not on your life. Now, I have had people approach me saying that they want to, you know, they want to have an armed resistance against the government and all that. I'm going, oh, well, good luck for you. Catch you later. You know, and wanting to talk to me about it and get me involved with it. My battle is not for the kingdom of this world. My battle is for the king of the next world, not this rubbish. And so should the government be able to look at me and be subjective to their definitions that they make up as to what a terrorist is? They could say that this is terrorism I'm committing right now. Look what they've done with Hannah and Calvin. They've retrospectively charged them for something that wasn't even a law that they apparently would have broken had they done it later. But they've retrospectively charged them. Now, as you know, I don't agree with the way that Calvin does things, not at all. But I don't support that whatsoever. That's tyranny that they're doing on Calvin and Hannah. I totally, you know, am not for that whatsoever. And so we're in this strange impasse where these people now in this organisation, the Christchurch Court, with our former Prime Minister, who was the most draconian, absolute nutjob, insane tyrant the world had seen, along with Trudeau, along with Hitler, Mussolini, along with Stalin, along with Mao, along with Pol Pot. They are all the same. Hitler, Himmler, doesn't matter. They are all the same. Macron, Angela Merkel, Tony Blair. And now we've got her, Ardern, in charge of this organisation here. Can you believe it? And so is it any wonder that we now have a party going after middle earning people and above in New Zealand? That's communism. Is it any wonder we have Microsoft and Amazon Web Services wanting to control all of the digital world in New Zealand and the data cloud? That's fascism. That's here, signed off by Ardern while she was Prime Minister. And it just goes on and on and on. And is there any surprise that our universities who agree with this, who spout and teach this, you've got a professor who writes an article today that says, you know what, why don't we have a celebrate lockdown day by having a lockdown day? What an absolute absurdity. I really don't know what to say, really. But I tell you what I am going to do. I am going to look at this article here, and then I still have other articles I wanted to talk about tonight, but I want to keep you for an hour tonight because we may have a longer show tomorrow. But I want to talk about this guy. Here's another Labour communist. This is Chris Farfoy. And he's written this article. And I'm going to see if I can find something and see if it makes sense. Let's see if I can find this. All right. No, I can't find it. There's an article I tried to find, and I thought of it just before going live. I forgot that I had it. But anyway, let's have a look at this. It's about Chris Farfoy, this article, and how he was destroying natural rights, freedom of speech, and et cetera, et cetera. I'll find it and I'll show it tomorrow night. Anyway, Chris Farfoy, as Anzac Day fades, let us harness the spirit it represents. We're going to have a laugh about that in a minute. Now, this guy here was a minister one week, and then he was a government lobbyist the next week. No stand down. He leaves Parliament a couple of weeks later. He's employed in a public relations firm as their CEO, and he's now lobbying his bosom buddies, his BFFs in the government. How corrupt can you be? Chris Farfoy is a government public relations specialist. Oh, let's not even worry about that. Let's just read a couple of lines of this drivel, and we'll talk about why this is a laugh. Anzac Day evinces a sense of patriotism from New Zealanders that is needed now more than ever. At its simplest, the mere awakening of families for the local dawn service sends a message to the youngest New Zealanders that this morning is unlike others. At a higher level, Anzac Day is a remembrance and honouring of sacrifice and the disproportionate impact that conflicts have had on New Zealand. It's also the only day we stand and proudly sing Advance Australia Fair. Okay. You know what's so funny here? I didn't notice this before. He says this, something has been happening over the last 20 years, as more and more children and families have been making the chilly early morning pilgrimage to remember the courage and sacrifice made by our service men and women. This is so heartening to see. But he's not mentioning something. And I wonder if you guys can pick it out, what he's not mentioning. Now I'm going to ask you to remember this, because this is a dead giveaway, which may support what I was going to say anyway. But he's saying here about an honouring of sacrifice, right? An honouring of sacrifice. Then he says over here, pilgrimage to remember the courage and the sacrifice made by our servicemen and women. Now, just remember he said that, because there's a point I want to make about that. But you go through this. And it says again, he says, no one can share their pain and experiences. Okay. Talking about internal and external conflict and all that. He's talking about it. Talking about, of course, all these things. But you know what? You know what he's not mentioning? And I didn't notice this afternoon. You know what he's not talking about? Why these men and women, why these servicemen and women made that sacrifice. I didn't notice that today, to be honest with you. Don't you think it's funny, in a very strong way, and in a sad and strange way as well, don't you think it's funny he is talking about the sacrifice of these servicemen and women, but he's not talking about why they died and paid that sacrifice? They died to protect freedom. They fought tyranny. They fought communism. They fought fascism. They fought globalism. And they fought this crap that we're living in today. Did you notice? I can't believe it. I didn't pick up on this today. I've been driving throughout my day and doing this in between. So doesn't that stagger your belief? Absolutely, Debbie. Sister Debbie just called it. They were sent to slaughter deliberately. Absolutely. And I would have been up for it myself in those days. 25 years ago, with the brain I had on me then, I would have been up for it. I wouldn't have thought twice about it. And they didn't. They all did it for the right reason. Those men and women that did that, that have served in the modern era of Yugoslavia, of Iraq, of Kuwait, of Afghanistan, or the East Timor, they did it for the right reasons, to help people, to protect people. But from what? From tyranny. Now, the sad thing about this is that you've got Chris Farfoy writing this article as if he's got some sort of justification for writing what he's writing. Now, I am having a look to see if I can see where I put this article, because this would really, really, really help a lot for you to see this article, which I should be able to find. Just bear with me a little bit, guys. Just bear with me, see if we can find it. Maybe I can't, but I'm going to find it for you because I want you to see it. Because basically, let's see, is it, if it's that one? Nope, that's not the one there. No, I don't have it here, guys. I'm so sorry, but I wanted to show you it because it would have outlined what I was going to say about Chris Farfoy. But there is an article about Chris Farfoy and about him destroying natural justice. And it was in the New Zealand Herald. I'll bring it up for you tomorrow night when during the Major Dicol Health and Your Wellbeing show. And the entire article written by this New Zealand Herald journalist is about how Chris Farfoy was destroying decency, destroying natural justice, human rights, freedom of speech, through all the hate speech censorship bills and the way that he was writing them up. And this man has the audacity to write an article like this, but unbelievably, and you know, this is the dead giveaway, because he would have been caught out by someone like me who would be reading this. Anyone onto it would have looked at this article. If he had said honoring their sacrifice to defend freedom and liberty and freedom of speech, we would have gone, you hypocrite, you nut job. We still can, because now when you hit the tripwire on this, it's clear that he hasn't said. I mean, here it is again for you. I'll highlight the whole thing. Something has been happening over the last 20 years as more and more children and families have been making the chilly early morning pilgrimage to remember the courage and sacrifice made by our service men and women. Why, Chris Farfoy? Why did they pay that price and make that sacrifice? It's because they were fighting tyranny. It's because they were fighting exactly what we are living in today. We are living in not a fourth industrial revolution. We're living in the Fourth Reich. But now they've got all the other tools from the toolkit that they've used in yesteryears, and they've got the technology now to make it all work. All work. They may not have had the technology 100 years ago. They've got it today, and they've got it, and they're using it for high surveillance, carbon footprint, tracking, tracing you, listening to you, watching you, measuring you, inventory control of everything you need to live as a free human being. And no wonder Chris Farfoy couldn't bring himself to say that the men and servicewoman of yesteryear who died for our freedom did it because they were fighting tyranny, because he's been a part of it. All right, family, I'm going to have to leave it there. I've got a couple of things I've got to do now, but I want you to share this, please, because, you know, again, I'm being shadow banned. I've caught out YouTube taking subscribers and viewers off my YouTube channel. Caught them red-handed. I've got the screenshots I took. And you've got Facebook. Don't forget, they closed my political page. So what we're going to do is that we're going to look at class action against these particular big tech companies. We are. As soon as I get out of my cases, I'm going to be doing this. Now, just on that note, guys, you know, just want to remind you, please, if you can, help me by signing the petition for supporting myself and Vinny to stay out of jail. I can't believe I'm even saying that. Doesn't that underline the point? Doesn't that absolutely underline the point that as to why that man could not say the servicemen and women in New Zealand that died, they died protecting our freedom and sovereignty and our personal well-being and freedoms and personal sovereignty, national sovereignty? He couldn't say it because you probably got to give him some kudos that at least he wasn't so crass and so fake to say that. But yes, we had a woke leftist judge jail me and Vinny for victimless crime, while manslaughter killers, while gang members who have raped, who have done drive-bys, when people that have been abusing children get home detention. My good grief, it's unbelievable. But if you could sign this and share this for us, please, we'd be really grateful. And also, please, once again, if you are able to support me with my legal fees and the work that I do, I'd be very, very grateful. Here's the account to do that. I'm changing the account soon in my bank, so as soon as it's changed, I'll let you know. All right, whānau, thank you so much for your time. Please keep the peace in your spirit. I know it's easy to get upset with these things, and sometimes I do as well. And you know, it's horrible to see, but Jesus died the same way for them as he did for me, and for me the same way he died for them. We're all God's children, all of us, even the evil people. And as the Bible says, as King David and Solomon wrote, the sun shines on the righteous and on the evil and the sinful. And all of us, each one of us living, needs to have a relationship with the Lord. This world is going to end soon. And family, can I please say, seek the Lord while he can be found. If you'd like to email me and be a part of my weekly Bible studies, please do. My email is at the bottom of my finger, way at the bottom, billy@ibc.net.nz. Please email me if you'd like to be in touch. If you've got good stories that you want to share, I want to interview people on the show more and more, so I'm interested in your story, especially Sister Debbie as well. Debbie Barlett, there's a message here for you. I've always been wanting to get you on here to interview you about the arrest, because you were arrested with me on the day that I got arrested. So I want to talk to you about that as soon as I can. But just want to just say, keep the peace in your spirit, family. Have a good sleep, a good rest. Seek the Lord while he can be found. And I will see you tomorrow at 7:30 with Sister Caroline Mansfield on the Magic Dicol Health and Your Wellbeing Show. Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks so much. Good night, and God bless, and Paul Marie.